So Maya, we
Your conference is being recorded.
We have volunteers on the call from Philadelphia, Chester County, Delaware County, Bucks County. I haven't heard anybody from Montgomery County. And I think there's probably 10 people or so on the call. Some may join as we go through. So please introduce yourself and speak for, 10, 15 minutes and then field some questions, okay?
Great. Thank you so much. So I am Maya Vamrasam. I'm the Delaware Riverkeeper, and my organization is the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, and we do work throughout the 4 states of the Delaware River watershed. I hope that you all were able to access the PDF of the brief PowerPoint that I sent you. I will go through it pretty quickly and just refer to slide numbers as I go along. So we're at slide one now, and we're going to go to, please go to slide number two. And I've lost my own slides. So really my goal today is really to inspire everybody to realize that our current system of environmental protection laws and our current political system really is failing us when it comes to environmental protection, and that we do need a new path. And we need a new path that will not just sweep across Pennsylvania, but that will sweep across the entire United States of America. I do make the case for this path in my new book called The Green Amendment. If you were to decide to purchase that, every penny goes to environmental protection, none goes to me. But you don't have to purchase the book in order to learn about this concept. You can hear about it now. And there's also a website called forthegenerations.org where there's a lot of this information and a lot of tools you can access if you want to think about this Green Amendment movement. The reason why we need a Green Amendment movement is our, while we have thousands of environmental protection laws at the state level, the local level, and the federal level, we still are seeing incredible levels of environmental degradation. So if you go to it's labeled slide four. I don't know what happened to slide three. But if you go to slide four, it's a series of newspaper headlines which really document just a small sampling of the multitude of ways that communities across the country are being devastated by pollution and environmental degradation. People are losing their health, the quality of their lives, they're losing their property values, they're losing jobs, they're losing peaceful time with their family. Really, every aspect of people's lives are being devastated by pollution and degradation. And one of the reasons why all of this pollution and degradation is happening, despite that we have all of these thousands of environmental protection laws, is that those laws are focused on managing the how, when, and where pollution and degradation will happen. They are not really focused on preventing degradation. And if you go to, it's a second slide four, it's a picture of a beautiful little black baby. And so in case you're wondering, just a beautiful baby there. But this is really to represent the fact that not only do we have communities across the Commonwealth and across the nation being devastated by environmental degradation, but we continue to have minority and low-income communities that are targeted for highly polluting activities and industrial operations. If you go to slide five, one of the reasons why we are having so much damage is that while we have all of these environmental protection laws, for the most part across the United States of America, we don't have a right to clean water, clean air, and healthy environments. Go to slide six. You'll see an example of the kinds of rights we do have, the right to free speech and freedom of religion and private property rights. But for the most part, we don't have environmental rights, as you'll see they're highlighted in red. On slide seven, though, what you will see is that actually here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which I hope all of you as Sierra Club members are fully aware of, is that here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, it is different. We actually do have a constitutional right in the Bill of Rights section of the Pennsylvania Constitution that recognizes and protects an inalienable right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. Go to slide eight. One of the problems, though, is that while we have had this constitutional provision on the books since 1971, almost as soon as it passed, it was really undermined by some Supreme Court decisions, Pennsylvania Supreme Court decisions, which declared Pennsylvania's Environmental Rights Amendment to be beautiful language, but really just a statement of policy. It didn't have the same force and effect of law as the other rights listed in the Bill of Rights section of Pennsylvania's Constitution. But that changed in 2013. After 42 years of just being thought of as public policy, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, seven towns, and a physician were able to change the future of environmental protection here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania because we changed the way the Environmental Rights Amendment in the Constitution was viewed. As a result of drilling and fracking and all the devastation that it brought and the passage of a law passed in 2012 that was known as Act 13, which mandated, amongst other things, that drilling and fracking be allowed to happen in every part of every community in the Commonwealth, including our residential areas, Delaware Riverkeeper Network and seven towns teamed up with a physician to challenge this very devastating piece of legislation that would have allowed the already rampant drilling and fracking that was happening in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to become unbelievably even worse. And we realized at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network that we might be in a moment in time when the industry and government had so overreached that maybe we could change the way the Environmental Rights Amendment was viewed by the courts. So if you go to slide 9, you will see that, you know, we brought a challenge to Act 13, and each of the players in this legal challenge brought their own legal arguments to the table. And the argument that the Delaware Riverkeeper Network and I as the Delaware Riverkeeper brought to the table through our legal counsel was that Act 13 went so far that it violated the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania. And if you go to slide 10, what you will see is that in December of 2013, we secured a decision out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that breathed legal life back into this long-ignored Environmental Rights Amendment and actually declared that core provisions of Act 13 that we were challenging violated the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania. Now go to slide 11, and this is really to represent that what we have been doing at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network and other organizations following in our footsteps here in Pennsylvania, what we have all been doing is doing the work of defining and defending what it means to actually have an environmental right protected in the, you know, in the Bill of Rights section of a constitution, because it's not instantly clear where the line is. Just as with every constitutional provision we have, whether it's free speech or freedom of religion or private property rights, we know that we hold these rights dear and we know that they are deserving of the highest level of protection. But exactly where the line is about what is a violation of the constitutional right and what isn't totally clear, right? We make that clear through our advocacy and, when necessary, through litigation. So in Pennsylvania, we're using our advocacy and we're using litigation to define and defend our environmental rights here in the Commonwealth. And also to make clear to all those government officials that have been ignoring Pennsylvania's constitutional obligation for all those 42 years when it was declared to be just public policy, to really make very clear to them, you now have a clear obligation to protect our constitutional rights to a healthy environment. You can no longer abdicate that responsibility. But if you go to slide 12, what you will see is that I really believe that there is a message that goes far beyond the boundaries of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. There's really a message for every state across our nation. Slide 13, and that message is that we really all have to embrace that we as people here on this earth have an inalienable, inherent, and indefeasible right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. And that we need to rise up as states and as a nation to seek and secure the highest level of recognition and protection for those rights in every state across the nation, just as we have done and are doing here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. If you go to slide 14, what you'll see is that I really believe that what we need is what I call a Green Amendment movement, because Pennsylvania's Environmental Rights Amendment is what I define to be a green amendment, because it gives this greatest level of protection. And we need a green amendment movement that sweeps the nation, because if you go to slide 15, what you will see is that there are only two states in the United States of America with this highest level recognition and protection with the green amendments, and that's Pennsylvania and Montana. And so what I have been doing since the before and since publication of my book, The Green Amendment, is I have really been going across Pennsylvania and going across states across the nation to really inspire the passage of green amendments where they are needed, where they don't exist, which is pretty much everywhere. And here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, really trying to make sure that everybody fully understands and embraces the fact that they do have this inalienable right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment, and to fight for that right as firmly and as strongly as they can. If you go to the next slide, which I think is slide 16, you will see that actually since we've launched this Green Amendment movement, not only have we had important successes here in Pennsylvania, but we've actually had Green Amendments proposed in New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. And there are a number of other states where I'm working with communities who are interested in this concept. If you go to slide 17, you know, we really have to ask the question whether we're talking about Pennsylvania right now, where our Green Amendment now has new legal life, or other states where we're seeking to pass Green Amendments. What does it really mean to have a newly refurbished or passed Green Amendment? Well, on slide 18, what you will say is one of the most important things is it means that you actually have a right, an inalienable right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment, a right that is recognized and protected the same way we recognize and protect those other fundamental freedoms we hold dear, like the right to free speech and private property rights. If you go to slide 19, it reminds us, right, and tells us that when we have a constitutional right to something, particularly when it comes to the environment, it changes the way we think about the environment and our right to a clean and healthy environment and the way we speak about it. We no longer go to public meetings hoping our public officials will do the right thing. We go to our public meetings expecting them to do the right thing. And when they make the wrong decision that puts in peril our environment and our environmental rights, we don't sit down disgruntled and upset and frustrated about the fact that we lost yet another environmental battle. No, we rise up anew because we realize that even though those government officials may say they checked off the boxes that they, you know, complied with the regulation, we know that there's some greater obligation that they now have, the obligation to protect our constitutional right to a healthy environment. So it just changes the power of how we feel about, speak about, and advocate for protection of our environment and our communities. If you go to slide 20, I just give us a summary, though, of, you know, one of the benefits of a Green Amendment or a refurbished Green Amendment like we have now in Pennsylvania, newly empowered, is from the get-go, it should change the way decision-making happens. No longer are decision makers focused on managing pollution, the how, when, and where, but they really are focused on anti-degradation, preventing pollution, preventing harm. Anti-degradation is not a new term when it comes to environmental laws, lawmaking, or protection. A fundamental element of the Clean Water Act, for example, is the anti-degradation provisions. So we know how to advance legal protections of our environment in a way that is about avoiding degradation, not just about managing it. It becomes very clear that all government officials must protect these environmental rights, and that in so doing, they have to consider what is the existing environmental condition in the community? And we, if we approve this project or advance this decision or piece of legislation, what will be the consequences? And that has to be factored into their decision making. Will the consequences be so severe that we have overstepped into the realm of violating environmental rights? An Environmental Rights Amendment really does mandate that decision makers think about cumulative impacts and consider the science. They can't use lack of data or lack of information or lack of knowledge as an excuse for presuming there will be no harm and therefore allowing something to advance. You know, we really start to go more into the realm of precautionary principle kinds of thinking with an Environmental Rights Amendment. Decision makers know that they have to protect the environment, not just for present generations, but for future generations, and that it really is no longer good enough to say, I complied with the letter of the law, with the letter of the statute, or with the letter of the regulations in approving this new industrial operation in this already contaminated community. Now they have to do that extra look. Did I comply with my constitutional obligation? And what you will see in slide 21, that one of the powerful outcomes and benefits of this changed thinking that comes from an environmental rights amendment is that environmental justice is strengthened. Because in addition to all those different ways of thinking about decision making, government officials are now obliged by law to protect everybody's rights to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment, because we all have the same right. And government is now obliged to treat us equitably. No longer can we sacrifice one community in order, in our own minds or in our own words, to protect another. No more sacrifice zones in this new world of environmental protection. And, of course, in the end, if people violate or if government violates their obligation, their duty to protect our environment to the constitutional level, individuals and communities have the legal right to go to court and enforce their constitutional right against these governmental misdeeds. You no longer have to find a statute that gives you permission to go into court. You have automatic ability to go to court because you're now talking about a constitutional right, a constitutional issue. And so, you know, all of this, as I said, I really try to capture, as you'll see on slide 23, I really try to capture this in the book, The Green Amendment. And the book is written to be a tool, a roadmap, and hopefully to provide inspiration to those in Pennsylvania and beyond to really go forth and fight for their right to a healthy environment. And I believe that these fights have to take place state by state by state, that we have to begin at the state level, passing green amendments in every state across the nation. And as we go forth and do that work of educating, organizing, and inspiring communities at the state level to pass green amendments, very quickly people will realize that state-level green amendments aren't enough. We also need a green amendment in our federal constitution, because that is the only way we are going to hold accountable this out-of-control president or any future out-of-control president and out-of-control Congress that for their wholesale assaults on our environment. So with that, I'm done, if there are any questions.
He's powerful.
Thanks very much, Maya. I'll start. I took a class called Environmental Law for Non-Lawyers, and it was really eye-opening to me to learn that the root of authority of the EPA, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, is in the Constitution, is the, what do you call it, the Interstate Commerce Clause. It's like 10 words that say, you know, you shall not do anything to inhibit commerce between states. And from that grows the authority to not pollute from across state lines. And that just seems so weak for, you know, for a national constitution to have in supporting the environment. So I agree with you. We need something ultimately at the federal level.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to remember back in 1790, they were assuming they could, rape and pillage forever. Hey, we got a whole continent here.
Yeah, and those are all such, good points. And it really is there are many mechanisms that have resulted in our current system of environmental protection. And when each of our environmental protection laws has been passed and has been implemented, we don't want to ignore they have accomplished good. They have reduced pollution. They have prevented illness. They've saved lives. They've created jobs. They've supported, local economies and reduced flooding and flood damages and drought and wildfires. And that is all great. But they are not strong enough to truly do the job of protecting our environment. And as you said, we do need something more. We need something better than what we already have. And I truly believe after 25 years of environmental advocacy and experience that this is the pathway forward. That's in addition to all the advocacy I did as a child, but I don't count that.
Hello, Maya.
Mm-hmm.
This is Leo Sinclair.
Hi.
Have you heard about today's bill passed in the House in Pennsylvania?
Which one? The one that's if you explain it, there are a bunch that are moving right
now. 2154. Basically, they remove environmental standards for conventional drillers in Pennsylvania.
But it didn't pass both houses and get signed by the right. We've got a lot of bad bills on the fracking front and beyond. Bills, trying to stymie public protest against pipelines and the drilling industry. Right. We have so many devastating pieces of legislation that are currently advancing through the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And I think in each one of these, right, that is why making sure that our lawmakers and our people understand that they have these environmental rights and or environmental obligations is so powerfully important. And through the Environmental Rights Amendment, depending on what passes and how it passes, we do have a greater potential to protect ourselves, just like we were able to protect ourselves against the most devastating aspects of Act 13. So, this is a powerful weapon in our toolbox. But I do think that we always have to remember, right, that, in addition to having this front line of defense and power in our Constitution, another front line of defense and power is who we have in office. All of us on the phone know that, and we all know that part of our work is to be making sure that we are only getting into office people who truly care about our right to a healthy environment and understand that, we are all devastated, including them, by environmental degradation.
Maya, have you had a chance to present any of these ideas in the central part of the state or west of Pittsburgh? Have you gotten a sense of how they respond to these, to environmental rights?
So it really is, pretty uniform, whether we're talking about across Pennsylvania or across the nation. First off, here in Pennsylvania, it is still stunning to know how many people just do not realize that this constitutional right exists. They just don't know about it. And I'm not just talking about lay people. I am talking about government officials. I'm talking about, local officials and state legislators. So, part of the work that we really are struggling to do in central Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania, north and south of the state, is getting people to understand and embrace that right. And part of the reality that we experience, that I've always experienced in my work, is that people are most open and wanting to hear about and learn about these things when they are the ones that are faced with some devastating threat, whether it's a pipeline or fracking or new industrial operation or whatever. And so, you know, very often when I go into communities and talk about this, you know, if they are faced with that threat, they are so much more open to wanting to learn about the power of a Green Amendment. And when the threat just isn't there, it's amazing how quickly it sort of goes over people's heads. And that's just pretty universal. But I find that not just about the Green Amendment concept. I find that educating people about stormwater or, you know, the impact of toxins or anything, that's pretty universal. So it's really a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag reaction depending on what's happening in that community.
Did I hear you say that there's some progress in New Jersey, Maryland, New York? Or?
Yeah. So in each of those three states, we have a legislator that has actually proposed a Green Amendment. In the state of New York, the language has actually already passed the Assembly, and we have a companion Senate bill. In the state of New Jersey, we have an Assembly proposal that's in committee, but we don't yet have a Senate champion, and that's the same in the state of Maryland. You know, but both of those, all three of those scenarios are very early on, you know, in the life cycle of pursuing a Green Amendment. But everywhere we do it, it's going to be work. There was also a proposal in the state of Florida that was advancing. The people who are advancing it, you know, had the right intentions in their hearts, but what they were advancing would have been horrible had it passed. So the first body of work I had to do was convince people that they needed to reject what was being proposed. And now I'm trying to work with them to get them organized around, you know, good Green Amendment language. I'm working with folks in Oregon, in Colorado, in Massachusetts, in a number of other states, all in the beginning stages, right? It all starts with you know, those real champions, like those on the phone who can see the vision and want to get things started. But we are getting the ball slowly starting to roll in other states as well.
Can I ask about Pennsylvania? I don't think you mentioned the CELDF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, which is encouraging municipalities to move ahead in this area. What do you think about their efforts?
Yeah, so CELDF has a different approach. In how they approach environmental protection. You know, they have their democracy school and they have, you know, their initiative focused on stripping corporations of personhood and of their rights. You know, and these other pathways, which are very valid and valuable, they are just fundamentally different. There's also, you know, big movements in Pennsylvania and beyond to, you know, advocate for the rights of nature. Another very powerful concept, but fundamentally different. And then we also have a group called Our Children's Trust that is looking to get the climate, rights to a sustainable climate, read into existing constitutional language. Also, very powerful, very valid, but fundamentally different than this idea of using our current system of constitutional protection and very directly inserting into it what we want to happen, what we need to happen in terms of environmental recognition and protection. CELDEF and the Rights of Nature movement, right, are an entirely different pathway than that. And then our Children's Trust is more focused on trying to read things into what we already have. I just don't want to leave it up to the discretion of anybody. I think through the amendment process, we can be very, very forthright and very, very clear about our demands when it comes to environmental protection. No need to convince anybody to do the right thing if we put together the right language.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maya. Is there a higher threshold for a state amendment than a bill, than a law, like there is at the federal level?
Yeah, so always, in every state, some states have different processes or different opportunities, you know, different pathways forward. Some have the opportunity for constitutional conventions and the like. But for the most part, even where that exists, for the most part, states have a process where you have to go before the legislature one or two times, and then it goes to a vote of the people. So there is a higher threshold of passage, which means there's also a higher threshold for removal once you've had success, which is one of the powerful things about a constitutional amendment, as you are alluding to.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Can you talk about any book signings that you're going to have in the area this summer?
Folks go to the book's website, mayavanrossum.green, or to the initiative's website, forthegenerations.org. You will actually see all of our book signings, or all of my book signings, as they come up. I do have several coming up, you know, over the course of the next month. To be perfectly honest, I would need a second to look them up. I don't remember until I actually get there. But I have been talking to some Indivisible groups and, you know, and others in the area. I think it was just in Montgomery County's Indivisible group. Anyway, if you go to one of those two websites, mayavanrossum.green or forthegenerations.org, you will see all of the opportunities as they arise. And like I said, you know, every penny goes to advancing this movement and protecting the environment. I don't take a single penny, because it really is about saving the world for all of us, saving the earth for all of us. And I'm very committed to that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. It was a great presentation. I will add this recording and your presentation to our volunteers page. And thank you very much.
Great. And if any group wants me to come speak in person before their community, all they have to do is get in touch, and we will make an arrangement, and I will happily be there. And I super appreciate this opportunity to speak with everybody on the phone.
Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Maya.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was great.
Thank you. Everybody.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Good night, Jim.